Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Hello and welcome to the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zachary Elwood. This is a podcast aimed at better understanding other people and better understanding ourselves. You can learn more about it at behavior-podcast.com. This is an episode about anesthesia. I talked to anesthesiologist Ashita Goyal. That's Goyal, G-O-E-L. Ashita has been in private practice since 2007. She did her residency at Johns Hopkins and attended Mayo Medical School. I know Ashita personally, and the reason I initially was interested in interviewing her was that once years ago, she told me some very interesting stories about her experiences with patients under anesthesia, confessing some surprising things to her. So I thought it'd be interesting to ask her about those experiences. Other things we talk about include the factors involved in figuring out the right dosage of drugs for people, what kinds of states she puts people into, differences and anomalies in how people react to drugs, the amnesia aspect of anesthesia, her thoughts on a viral video, which maybe you've seen, of a guy who apparently woke up from anesthesia and didn't recognize his own wife. And we talk about a few other things. I thought this was a fun and interesting episode, and I think you'll like it. If you like this podcast, would you be willing to leave a review for it on Apple Podcasts or another podcast platform? That would mean a lot. If you're interested in getting a paid premium subscription to this podcast, go to my website and check that out. You'll get ad-free access and be able to collaborate with me on episodes by seeing questions I plan for guests and more. Okay, here's the talk with Ashita Goyal. Hi, Ashita. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Zach. Glad to be here.
So maybe we can start with, are there specific kinds of operations that you specialize in?
Sure. So let's begin with, I'm an anesthesiologist. I've been in private practice for a little over 16 years now. And prior to that, I had 3 years of residency behind me at a major academic institution. My practice is based on more community procedures. And I basically do, I'm what's referred to as a general anesthesiologist, and I basically do all kinds of cases, everything from labor epidurals and C-sections to pediatrics, mostly in healthy children, usually greater than the age of 6 months, to really just any type of general case. The things that I'm probably not qualified for that's been kind of eliminated from my practice is transplant surgeries and cardiac surgery.
When I was reading up about anesthesiology in general, it seemed like there were the lighter kind of procedural anesthesia where people were more functional and could follow directions versus the, you know, fully out state.
Right. Yeah.
And sounds like you do both of those.
I do. Yeah. All. So instead of considering it like either or, consider it a spectrum. Mm. And so, I mean, not all surgeries need, like every surgery doesn't need the same level of anesthesia. And which, by the way, I have to say, it's really funny because it takes people a while to like say words like anesthesiologist and anesthesia and and anesthesiology.
Right. I'm never sure if I'm saying them right.
Yeah. It's a tough one. So if you consider a spectrum, there are some surgeries that require very little medication. And a classic example of that is cataract surgery. With cataract surgery, oftentimes people are getting very tiny doses of relaxing medicine. I actually tell my patients, it's like I'm going to give you maybe half a glass of wine. And that's if you're healthy enough to take that half glass of wine. And between that and, you know, numbing medicine that we put directly on the eye, people do great. But then there are surgeries that require like very prolonged, deep levels of anesthesia. So think of these as like big surgeries where they're doing invasive maneuvers like spine fusions, maybe craniotomies, or when we're doing surgery on the brain, or if we're going inside your belly of some sort. So some of those surgeries require a lot more and sometimes a combination of anesthetics, meaning that you might need a general anesthesia to make you sleep during surgery, but then you would also have regional anesthesia on top of your general to help out with things like pain control afterwards or during the procedure.
So are there certain guidelines for certain operations or procedures? Like, are you following like a something that most anesthesiologists follow, or is it very much like case by case where you're deciding, different drugs or different levels of anesthesia depending on very specific situations, if that makes sense?
Yeah, well, it does. So, I mean, let's begin with that's what training was for. So to become an anesthesiologist, let's go back and say that you have to go and do, like, anesthesiologists are MDs, they're doctors. They went to medical school. And then after that, they did anesthesia training in a form of an anesthesia residency. During my years as an anesthesia resident, I learned all about the different surgeries that we do, what type of typical anesthetics we use for those surgeries, and what people need to be comfortable and safe during those operations. As you can imagine, surgeries change, new procedures are created, different type of technology is used. And so that's where the clinician part of it comes in. So during your training, you learn some of the basics and what you need to know for most procedures. And for the most part, it gets you through most of your career. But along the way, because you have this arsenal of information, you know, like technology, techniques, drugs, like, you have a wealth of experience. And so you can use it to tailor different anesthetics as times change. A classic example is that when I came out of residency, we often did knee surgeries with what we call general anesthesia, meaning where you're nice, deeply asleep. And oftentimes people have breathing tubes in, and maybe we would give numbing medicine at the knee joint directly. Now we've converted to doing spinal anesthesias with blocks into the thigh. What that does is that the spinal anesthesia basically makes people numb from like their waist on down. And we put a block into the thigh that then numbs up the knee for pain control for up to 20 hours. And now even that is starting to shift, and we're finding like the newest studies coming out saying that the block in the knee or in the thigh actually doesn't have as much benefit versus a catheter in the thigh. So that's what I mean by there's an evolution of my practice with time.
Mm-hmm. Is it accurate to say that there's a good amount of leeway that an anesthesiologist has to determine, you know, what the proper doses are, what the proper drugs are, and the proper approach, you know, that can vary a decent amount depending on the anesthesiologist?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. But with the caveat that we only have so many drugs, right? So there's only so many drugs that's going to make you fall asleep for like anesthesia and to keep you sleeping safely. There's only so many drugs that we have in our arsenal for pain control. And yes, new drugs do come out here and there, but it's not like a ridiculous number. So it's not like it's like an infinitesimal amount of like potions being made every day for every person.
So what are the main ways that, well, this is probably a big question, but when it comes to determining, you know, the right amount of dosage for drugs, what are the major factors that you consider? For example, I've heard, you know, that there's things people say about redheaded people having more tolerance to drugs and these kinds of things. And what would you say are the biggest factors, basically?
So most drugs are based or dosed on weight or ideal body weight. So weight being someone's actual weight versus what should be their ideal body weight. As you can imagine, many of us suffer from being very well fed in our country. So maybe our actual weight doesn't reflect what a person of our height should actually be. So that's what's referred to as ideal body weight. So based on that, that's kind of the guidelines. But from there, that's why we're there. We can titrate the medications accordingly. A classic example of this is, suppose you have someone who's a redhead, and we know from, you know, some studies that have been put out that redheads, they need 10% more anesthesia compared to non-redheads. So you might find that you do need that more anesthetic, or you could find that, wow, they're kind of a lightweight and they fall asleep right away. There'll be times when I have people who are pretty big. Like for example, let's just take a stereotypical like 6 foot male who's 350 pounds. And I make them fall asleep with the same amount of medication that would make me fall asleep. But then I'll have some little tiny female who's like 90 years old and will weigh like maybe 95 pounds. And they require more anesthetic than I thought.
It might be hard to say, but what's going on there with the different amounts needed?
So we all genetically metabolize drugs differently. So there's a whole world of pharmacogenetics. You have different types of receptors for medications than I do, or you know, maybe we have the same, but we metabolize drugs at a different level. Sometimes it's a circulation issue too. So how fast is the drug circulating in you compared to me? And then sometimes it's factors like, not just like what you're born with in terms of genetic receptors, but also your age and what kind of receptors do you have in your brain at 20 versus 85. There's so many variances. There's also in terms of circulation, this gets more complicated, but for example, when you are certain drugs deposit in fat. So if you are obese, it might take a little bit longer for that drug to kind of reach a level where it makes you fall asleep at the brain because it's actually depositing into your fat stores first. But then at the end of surgery, it takes you longer to wake up because those fat reserves are still holding the medication. So I know it sounds really complicated in terms of timing, but that's where my skill set comes in. Figuring out like, hey, this person might take a little extra time to wake up. So this is what I'm going to do. Or I'm going to give this person a shorter acting medication because I need them to wake up faster. And I worry that they're going to need a longer time to wake up. So that's where that knowledge, practice, training comes in.
And there can be some surprising differences in how people react to these substances, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
You reminded me of something. I once went to this home poker game at some friend's house, and people were taking, this was a long time ago, they were taking Xanax recreationally. And I took one, and I lost my short-term memory, and I was like, what's going on? I literally couldn't remember like the cards I was looking at and all these kinds of things, which was... And then I looked it up online later, and I found out that that was like a rare effect that some people have from Xanax. And it's just, you know, so just to say that there can be really strange reactions that people have to various medications. Is that accurate?
Right. So like another classic example. So Xanax is in the same line of a drug we have, Versed. Versed is basically an IV form of Xanax, except it's faster acting and shorter. It does the same thing. It actually causes a level of hypnosis, relaxation, and memory loss. We actually use Versed oftentimes before surgery, like while we're wheeling a patient back to the operating room, to help them relax for the procedure, but also to forget that they're going into the operating room. So, yeah, so they might be awake going into the operating room. They might be awake transferring themselves onto the OR table, all of that stuff. But at the end of surgery, they probably won't remember it. So that's what you've experienced. However, there is a rare like subset of patients I've had that I've given them Versed and they start becoming a little bit more like wild, restless, agitated, confused. And I've seen in maybe like four or five cases in my time, but the first time I saw it, I was floored because I was like so confused as to where is this coming from? And that's when I realized it's coming from that Versed. So a lot of like moms might know like the when kids have the opposite effect when they get Benadryl. Sometimes, you know, parents use Benadryl to like calm their kids on a plane ride, but then a subset of those patients will get wild on the airplane instead after a dose of Benadryl.
Yeah, it's kind of wild how different the reactions could be. And yeah, you talking about the, you know, people having very different metabolic reactions, you know, makes me think the Xanax thing and other experience I've had just makes me think I'm very sensitive to drugs.
And
I know that about myself. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That goes right back to those pharmacogenetics.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at tmobile.com/now.
Coming back from an injury or any painful condition is not a do-it-yourself project. Gaylord Physical Therapy in Cromwell, Cheshire, and North Haven has the technology and talent to help you get back to what you love. Whether it's taking a walk or running a marathon, Gaylord Physical Therapy in Cromwell, Cheshire, and North Haven can help you get back to your personal best. Gaylord, think possible.
Also available in Madison and Wallingford. Go to gaylord.org for more information.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So are there other factors involved in dosage that people might find interesting or surprising besides, you know, weight? Are there other things that come to mind there?
Well, yeah. So like we kind of touched on some. So we talked about weight. We talked about age. As you age, our brain metabolizes drugs a lot differently compared to when we were younger. And it tends to linger in our system much longer. So that's another one. So age. Gender does play a factor in certain things. And then height, actually. So for example, in epidurals, we tend to dose you on how tall you are. And that's actually a physiologic effect of like the medicine going up and down your spine. Mm. So taller people tend to need more medication than shorter people. And actually heavier people need less medication than skinnier people. So a tall, skinny person would need more medication than a short, overweight person.
Hmm, that is surprising. And to the question of talking about people that responded in a way that was surprising to the anesthesia, are there people that just required a very high dose and it was hard to figure out why that was? It was just an anomaly?
There are times when people have surprised me based on like their size and their health conditions that they needed as much anesthetic as they did. But, you know, that's like, once again, that's why I'm there, to titrate accordingly. In a unfortunate situation, a lot of anesthetics are administered through an IV. And every once in a while, like the IV will blow or infiltrate, as we say in the business. And instead of being, so your IV, your catheter is now no longer in your vein, but it's kind of gone through or transected that vein, is now in your tissues. So when we're injecting that medication, it's not going into your bloodstream, it's actually going into your tissues. So most recently, I actually had just a patient this last week where they weren't falling asleep to my anesthetic. And I'm like, huh, I'm giving you a fair amount of medication and you're still wide awake. I wonder if your IV is working. And clearly it was not. And their arm was like swollen, puffy from where that medication was instead of circulating in them. So that's just kind of more of a unfortunate occasional instance that happens.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of substances do you mainly work with? I know fentanyl is a popular one. What are some other ones that are used?
When we administer anesthesia, we often do what's referred to as polypharmacy. And what that means is that I typically give drugs, and like any kind of usual general anesthetic case, I give drugs that make you fall asleep. I give you drugs that help with pain control. I give you drugs that make you forget or feel relaxed. I give you drugs that prevent nausea, prevent pain afterwards. So, and then fluids, and then I can control everything else. Like if your heart rate goes down, I can make it go up. If your blood pressure goes up, I can make it go down. So I basically look over you and make sure you are safe and asleep or comfortable or whatever you need to be while surgery is going on. So that's like the crazy part about my job, is that being able to like use all these different drugs to achieve a different end goal, or to, you know, fix a problem, or just to, you know, maintain homeostasis. And so at the end, that, like I said, that you have a comfortable, safe surgery.
Do you have some interesting anecdotes about seeing anesthesia change people's behavior in major ways?
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So the most classic example that most people would like understand or relate to is, for example, when we give anesthesia to elderly people. Once again, I kind of mentioned that anesthetics can be prolonged in the elderly, along with, so it's not just how, like how long it lasts in our system, but at the same time, it kind of, our brains metabolize it differently. So it affects our brains differently. So, unfortunately, what that kind of creates, between the stress of surgery and the anesthetics, oftentimes elderly people struggle to metabolize these drugs. So they can wake up, confused afterwards, like somnolent or very sleepy for a while. Sometimes people even report like personality changes in their loved ones. And it's actually oftentimes in those cases, not the patient who notices it, but the family members or friends that see that person on a regular basis. So that's kind of the downside of like having surgery and anesthesia as you get older. Some other like interesting effects, and this is something I've noticed kind of in my own practice, is that just like hypnotherapy, I can actually give people some suggestions as they're falling asleep to anesthesia. I can create my own hypnotherapy. One of my mentors during my training, he kind of mentioned he did this like self-guided study where he went around and as he had patients who were smokers, he gave them the suggestion to like that they no longer wanted to be a smoker. He basically gave them hypnotherapy to quit smoking as they fell asleep to anesthesia. And according to his little limited study that he did on his own, I don't think he published it anywhere, he found that it actually had a temporary effect and people stopped smoking for a while, actually. And so I took this to heart. And in my patient population, we don't actually have too many smokers. Smoking has become unfashionable, at least where we are. And with that said, I took it upon myself to create a spiel as patients are falling asleep. And by saying spiel, I kind of give an image of things to think about as you're falling asleep. And I can say this spiel and still watch the monitors, make sure you're breathing well, essentially multitask, because it's almost kind of like a set recording of what I typically say to patients. And in my spiel, I talk about, I basically have a patient like have like their favorite destination. I usually suggest a gorgeous beach somewhere with a little umbrella drink. And I found that when I gave them this image of happiness and naughtiness, they often woke up happier. And my satisfaction scores actually were noticeably better.
Interesting. And so are they conscious and talking during this, or are they kind of like semi-conscious?
Right. It's like your Xanax, right? So when you took your Xanax and you said you don't really remember your cards very well, but you were awake, right?
Right.
So what happens like if during that time I came behind you and started whispering things into your ear about how much you love chocolate? Mm-hmm. And all you can think about is eating chocolate like every day, like every, you know, every day of the week, you need to at least have a piece of chocolate. You might go find that later on, like the next day, that you might need a piece of chocolate.
Mm-hmm. My experiences of getting general anesthesia were from a couple, three colonoscopies I've had now. And it's just such a weird experience, you know, like it was like being my experiences of being blackout drunk in college where I had, you know, I knew that I had gone around and talked to people and I was conscious and having all these conversations, but I had zero memory of it, you know, and
right.
I can imagine like in those conversations, if people had told me things, even though I couldn't remember, I could see that having an effect on me.
Yes.
Yes. Know, and directing and my train of thought and everything. Yeah.
Right. And it's not as much with colonoscopies nowadays, we mostly give propofol and a lot of us just give propofol only. But it's actually the drug Versed, like that Xanax that you experience. That's where the hypnosis part comes from.
Mm.
So that's where the power of suggestion happens. So that's like a fun little tidbit. You know, not everyone does that. But a lot of people are kind of have a boring spiel as patients are falling asleep, like count backwards or, you know.
And now that you mention it, I think the first time I got a colonoscopy, I had much deeper anesthesia because that was like the one where I just, it was like I was had a large swath where I could remember and, you know, people, I was talking to people and everything. The later two were much lighter, which makes me think I had different versions of anesthesia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Can some of the anesthesia act as sort of a truth serum and people will tell you things that they wouldn't usually tell you?
100%. Oh yeah. I mean, like maybe like sometimes I think of bigger pictures, like, you know, I feel like America as a nation of of predominantly extroverts. So we tend to be oversharers anyway, compared to like maybe the international population. However, toss in a little bit of like, you know, some of that same Versed drug or, you know, some of the other anesthetics at low, low doses. And patients, you know, as if they've had a nice stiff drink, no alcohol is actually involved, but they become loose and comfortable discussing their problems. Most anesthesiologists, the good ones, are the master of the 5-minute conversation. In 5 minutes, I can get most people to tell me a lot about their life. And in fact, even my friends notice, like, they're like, I don't know what it is about you, but I feel like I can tell you my deepest, darkest secrets, and I don't even know you. I go, I know. I'm the master of the 5-minute conversation.
Interesting.
And I say that 5 minutes specifically because that's how long I have. So this is the weird stuff about, and I'll come back to your specific question, but I just thought this was kind of fun to know, is that when patients go and sign up for surgery, they pick their surgeon. They'll like, get recommendations from a friend. They'll find out who's within network of their insurance. They'll like seek the specialist that treats their particular problem. But guess what? They are assigned their anesthesiologist the day of surgery. They have no idea who this person is. And within 5 minutes, that person needs to not only meet you, understand your health history, they need to secure trust from you. Like you have to, you know, the patient is literally putting their life in the hands of this stranger they just met 5 minutes ago. And, you know, ultimately we do have some level of trust. Like I trust the surgeon uses a good anesthesiologist. You know, they would tell me if there was any problems, they wouldn't use this individual, that sort of thing. But most people don't realize that they have no idea who is the person in charge of making them stay alive during that surgery. And that's the anesthesiologist. So going back to your...
Well, before we get back to that, I wanted to throw something in because that actually helps explain something because one of the questions someone told me wanted me to ask was, why are anesthesiologists so cool and friendly and like the coolest doctors? And that I think that might help explain it because they usually have to be the ones to like, you know, try to figure out what's going on with the patient or understand the patient in a really quick way. So they're probably more friendly than the other doctors who, you know, don't have that.
Yeah. Right. All physicians see patients differently. Mm-hmm. So your cardiologist is looking at you from like a cardiovascular standpoint. I'm looking at every patient from surgery and an anesthetic standpoint. So it's all about normal physiology, physiology under anesthesia, what's going to happen when blood loss happens or the surgical procedure happens, what are consequences, like how do we keep you safe? Anesthesiologists are like basically mobile ICU docs, but on a more rudimentary level. I can't really function 100% on my own in an ICU, maybe with a little bit more training, but we do a lot of the stuff that happens in the in the ICU. And then we do stuff that's like way less too. And so why are we the coolest doctors? That's actually kind of a show. Most of us are like OCD, anal retentive on the inside because we have to be. Like you want your anesthesiologist to be that neurotic person that's going to keep you safe and be hypervigilant. But we need to present ourselves in a very cool, calm, collective way so that people gain trust, surgeons gain confidence in the person who's helping them. So there is a persona that we have. And for example, if something goes bad during surgery and there's a code that needs to occur, everyone's looking to the anesthesiologist to run that code and keep, you know, bring that patient back. And they better be the calmest, controlled person in the room.
Yeah. So there's PR elements to it where you want to display yourself as very professional, very friendly to the patient and to the doctors and establish that you're professional and can handle what comes up.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes a lot of sense now that I think about my past experiences in the medical areas. Yeah. And so getting back to that, the question of people telling you things when they're, you know, kind of over confessing or whatever.
Oh, it's hilarious. I mean, I get everything a lot of times it's me establishing rapport with patients. So I love to learn about patients, like, who are you? I know you are, you know, gallbladder who has high blood pressure, a little bit of cholesterol issues and borderline diabetes. And, you know, you had a cough like a month ago. So, but that's who you on paper, but who are you? Like, you know, do you have any kids? Like, you know, what do you do for your job? Like, do you like your kids? Who do you like? Which kid do you like better? do you like your grandkids over your children? These are the, like, you know, and it's not just, it's learning about my patients to put an actual face to their health history, to understand who they are, because once I make them fall asleep, I will never know them and I will never see them again. Mm-hmm. But during these conversations, people then open up and they share. And for example, my favorite was this young girl who told me she was secretly married and her family had no idea. They thought the guy was just a boyfriend. And I'm just like, wow, that's like deep. Wow. That's deep.
So do you get the sense, I mean, for some people who do that, are they, do you get the sense that it's like really weighing on them and they're just looking for an opportunity to unburden themselves? Or, you know, is that kind of like there's a pressure in them that looking for an opportunity to share it?
Yeah, I think so. I think like when you, so let me, how do I put this? I have the privileged position to be in like where I get to take care of people at their most vulnerable time. They are in a foreign situation, 100% dependent, like complete loss of control, 100% dependent on the people around them, some of whom are complete strangers. So to say that there is stress, like when you go to have surgery or when patients are nervous to go under the knife, like you should absolutely be nervous. You should absolutely, there is that level, whether it's like overt or not. And, you know, I'm sure it becomes less the more surgeries you have, but it is a very, very vulnerable time period. I mean, like the minute you get in the operating room and we start like getting you ready for surgery, like most patients are naked, not for very long. They get covered up with drapes and gowns, you know, and warming devices and all of that stuff. But you are at a very vulnerable situation. And so between that, like, you know, just being nervous going under, you know, under like anesthesia, and then tossing in some medications to make you feel more relaxed and comfortable, you start sharing the stuff that bothers you or, you know, that might be on the forefront of your mind.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes out. Yeah. Have you had experiences where someone shared something with you and then seemed to remember it or seemed to regret sharing it immediately or anything like that?
Yeah, well, okay. Well, the person who told me she was secretly married was like, was surprised she shared out. Like she was like, she was shocked that she was like, oh my God, I told you that? But I've had a really interesting case where I had given a patient some relaxing medicine and he had just broken up with his girlfriend and he was a little bit sad about it. But you know, he just kept kind of talking about this breakup. And, you know, I was like, okay, you know, like, it's kind of sad. It's kind of bumming me out. And then as he was falling asleep, I was like, you know what, let's do a little change. Let's talk about something happier. You know, I want you to imagine a better place. Like, let's think about your favorite, you know, vacation destination. And so he fell asleep imagining, hopefully, his favorite vacation destination. Mm-hmm. However, later on, when he woke up, and I didn't realize this, but he spent the next week or 2 weeks being inconsolably sad about the breakup of him and his girlfriend. And I suspect like it was that power of suggestion. Like in this case, I didn't suggest anything to him. He himself was talking about this breakup. And with the drugs on board, plus his thoughts like kind of perseverating on this breakup, it just left him inconsolable for like the next couple of weeks. And he's like, I don't understand why I was so inconsolable, because he's like, the relationship wasn't that great to begin with. But I couldn't stop not being sad. So that was kind of an interesting like anecdote of like, or a story that I had in my experience.
So it's almost like the drugs lowered his defenses and allowed him to go down this path. Like once it opened up the floodgates kind of thing, he was in a bad state.
The way he described it is he described it as being overly sad for a relationship that wasn't that amazing.
Right. It didn't make logical sense to
him. There was no logical sense as to why he would be so sad. He was like, I hadn't been dating the girl for very long. And here I am like, you know, being essentially a hot mess for 2 weeks over this breakup. So it was
yeah, different mental states can put you in different trajectories or something. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, what you said about, people, confessing or unburdening themselves, it makes you think like if you were someone trying to, get a compromising material, like a spy in spy work or something, it'd be nice to have like a compromised anesthesiologist to try to get compromising material on people when they're under, you know. That makes me think of some sort of movie plot involving an anesthesiologist.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that before in the movie. So
right. Yeah. But here's something like the kind of tangentially speaking. So like totally off topic, but you know, anesthesiologists are actually the ones who typically administer lethal doses of medication for
euthanasia.
Executions.
Oh, executions. Yeah.
And euthanasia too. Yes. Basically, the drugs that you fall asleep to with anesthesia are those same ones used in lethal injections, plus or minus like one or two different drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I guess that's our other outsourced purpose.
I'm getting some ideas for some good movie plots here.
I know. Okay. Maybe a side hustle. I don't know. No.
But that's not something you yourself do. No, that's a specialty of its own. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, and, yes. And you know, like, I think like you remember, like, or sorry, you used to at one point live in Oregon, in that place, like, for example, euthanasia was legal.
Right. Kevorkian.
Exactly. Where I'm at, it isn't. And so that takes that out. But yes, there are actual anesthesiologists who consult for things like the Hemlock Society, who help with euthanasia for people across the country. So, yeah.
So do you know that viral video of the guy who wakes up from anesthesia and he's complimenting his wife and can't believe his like wife is really his wife. He's like, you can't be my wife. Do you know that video?
Oh my God. I did something similar, by the way.
Oh, you did something similar?
Oh yeah. Yeah. When I had my, like what I call my first real anesthetic as an adult, as a kid, I had my wisdom teeth taken out. But as an adult, I had a very similar experience when I woke up from my procedure.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business, like Delta Airlines. Together with T-Mobile for Business, Delta Airlines is putting 5G into the hands of ground staff so they can better assist on-the-go travelers with real-time information from the Delta Sky Club to the Jet Bridge. This is elevating customer experience. And Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business to connect over 2,200 stores around the country with 5G business internet. Plus, T-Mobile is powering AI solutions so Tractor Supply team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Coming back from an injury or any painful condition is not a do-it-yourself project. Gaylord Physical Therapy in Cromwell, Cheshire, and North Haven has the technology and talent to help you get back to what you love. Whether it's taking a walk or running a marathon, Gaylord Physical Therapy in Cromwell, Cheshire, and North Haven can help you get back to your personal best. Gaylord, think possible.
Also available in Madison and Wallingford. Go to gaylord.org for more information.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Would you care to talk in more detail about that? Or
oh, it's hilarious. I think I share the story plenty of times. So like, basically I woke up and my husband was there. So fortunately it was my husband. And like, you know, I was very, amorous. Yes, I was in a very amorous state. And like, you know, I was just like, you know, I need a kiss. And my husband's like, what? And I go, yeah, I need you to kiss me. And he was, my husband, Zach, as Zach knows, is a very fair-skinned Caucasian man who gets very embarrassed by PDA. And he turned lobster red. Like, I remember him clearly being very red. He goes, he's like, stop it. You're just waking up. I go, no, I need a kiss. And he's like, you know, he tries to shut me up and gives me like this peck on the cheek. And I look at him in a serious face and I go, no, I need tongue. And he was like, shut up. He's like, just stop it. These people, like, people know you. People can hear you and they know you.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, so that that video, the viral video of the guy who apparently couldn't recognize his wife. I mean, I initially thought that that was fake because it just seemed so outlandish that, I mean, of all the things I'd learned about anesthesia and people's reactions, I'd never, in my own experience too, I hadn't seen, it just seemed kind of outlandish that you wouldn't be able to recognize your own wife or family member or whoever. But, you know, looking into a little bit more, it seemed like it was rare but possible. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on, you know, how rare would it be for somebody in that state, like coming out of surgery, to not recognize their wife?
So it does happen. It's funny. I don't know what procedure that person woke. Like, I would need like the actual case details.
Right.
What is funny about that video is that gentleman is quite young. Like, he would metabolize drugs pretty fast. And the fact that he's male, like, so I question what procedure did he wake up from? But yeah, people do wake up like in, and when you're waking up from like kind of a larger general anesthetic, you tend to wake up and fall asleep, fall asleep. And it's kind of like we have to reiterate everything to you each time you wake up, and then you forget and you fall asleep, and then you wake up again. And like, you know, so to have like not recognize a loved one, like, I mean, you, when you first wake up, you tend to be pretty confused. Like, you have that, it's that moment when you wake up and you don't know where you're at. It's like that sudden, like, oh my God, where am I? Mm-hmm. And then to go from that to being like confused, groggy, you know, just really trying to get your bearings straight, trying to get the drugs to metabolize out of your systems quickly. So people do have like a different wake up. Some people wake up, we have people who wake up violent. We have people who wake up sleepy, you know, people who apparently wake up horny. I mean, so we get a fair amount of different personalities that come up. A lot of times, you know, young women can wake up tearful for some reason. And then separately, like, a lot of young men wake up more, like I said, more violent, or, you know, just a little bit more thrashing around.
Would you say it's similar to, you know, could it be seen as kind of analogous to like being in sort of a dream state, or even like a, you know, a state of psychosis, semi, you know, like there's some, so there's a realm of all sorts of possibilities there, basically.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Somewhere between a dream state to psychosis. Yeah. And there's actual delirium. So like some of the drugs, as they're wearing off your system, especially in the young, in the extremes of age. So in the young and the old, delirium is more present.
Yeah. Thinking about it in more of like a dream state kind of thing makes sense. Like, I can imagine somebody not recognizing somebody in that kind of state, or even just like pretending, or, you know, being sort of in a dreamlike state of pretending that you don't recognize them, or for whatever strange reason, right? It's like a dream.
Right.
So yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Any other wild, interesting anecdotes come to mind that we haven't mentioned? Cause those are pretty interesting.
I mean, those are the main ones. Like, the rest of the stuff is kind of like, you know, you have like the patients who occasionally wake up wild, that you might have to actually make them fall asleep again. Otherwise they're going to hurt like themselves or the staff involved. Like, no one wants to like have anyone punched in the room that doesn't need to be punched in the room. Things of that nature. Those are kind of the main ones. Like, but I will say that, I do love my job. My job is great. Working in the OR, for the most part, is an absolute blast. You know, nowhere else do you have an environment where you have two physicians taking care of one patient. And so that kind of can lead to some problems, but a lot of times it often leads to a lot of congeniality. There's a certain personality that like thrives in the OR. And so it's usually a group of extroverts who kind of understand a workflow. We're very similar to kind of like the airline industry, where there is things that, you know, once they get set in motion, you know exactly what to expect. And then you're prepared to deal with the consequences if any problem arises. Mm-hmm.
Something that occurred to me when you were talking about, you know, people waking up horny and such. Is there, you know, with the removal of inhibitions, do you see a lot of like people saying, you know, waking up and saying sexual things to people, harassing kind of way?
No, more like, for example, usually not sexual, not at that level. Like mostly it's more like, you know, oh, you're so wonderful. I love you.
Right.
You know, it's more of that nature. But sometimes, and this is more so in patients who are probably on drugs like PCP, and if they needed surgery, they're the ones who would wake up like actually, you know, cussing or swearing. But that's also related to some of the drugs they have in their system. So, yeah, those are often like the times or occasions where I may make a patient fall asleep again, just because like it's creating an unsafe environment for the staff.
How common is it to for people to wake up in a surprising way in the middle of a procedure, not feeling pain maybe, but just suddenly being conscious and talking? Is that fairly common?
Sort of. Let's go back to like talking about like the spectrum of anesthesia and sleep. So I kind of mentioned that there are some surgeries where you need to be completely under anesthesia, completely asleep with a breathing tube in, because we are doing a major invasive procedure. And for that reason, we need to keep you asleep. Under those conditions, and oftentimes like in case where like patients are paralyzed, we don't want you waking up. At all. We want you completely under, because to wake up, you're basically having awareness under anesthesia. And it's not only like potentially dangerous, but more so psychologically damaging to the patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? You don't want to see that.
Yeah. So like, those are kind of like those movies like Coma, I think or Awake. Was it Awake? Was like the name of the title. I forgot what it was now, but.
Oh yeah. Coma maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's two of them actually, a couple of them. Right. So like, you know, kind of like I think after that movie, I would have like plenty of patients ask me like, does that happen? How often does that happen? So there's that kind of stuff, and that's what we don't want. But then there's other scenarios where patients are, like in what we kind of refer to as like a lighter stage of sleep. I call it like heavy sedation. Some people like to call it, say, twilight. I never understood what twilight meant. But like basically we're giving an intravenous anesthetic where they're having more of a peak and valley effect of their level of sleep. And so in a case where they get a little less sleepy, they might start waking up. The reason why we're able to do this type of anesthetic is because they're often having a surgery where there's not really any pain or, you know, like where it's not as invasive. So if they were to get lighter or hear, and actually it's your hearing that comes back first as you start waking up. So if they were to hear something, it wouldn't be disastrous or painful for them. And they'd be able to move. And people tend to move before they actually gain like mental awareness of what's going on. So if we see you moving, we just make you fall asleep a little deeper.
Something I've wondered about, and you occasionally hear people talk about this idea that, you know, with anesthesia working, you know, a lot of it working by making you forget, you know, there's some people will say like, sometimes there's people that feel a lot of pain, but can't do anything about it. And they just forget about it. And that's, you know, that's one of the ways it can work. But is there some truth to that? Because it strikes me that maybe there'd be ways to tell someone was like very uncomfortable, like from, you know, the metrics on their, you know, monitoring and such. Can you speak to, you know, how common that idea really is?
So that's actually more common than you realize. I kind of mentioned a while ago that like what we do in our practice as anesthesiologists is polypharmacy. So we give drugs that keep you sleeping, prevent pain. We give you drugs that hypnotize and make you forget. It's not how we want to do it, but every once in a while, you'll have a patient who gets lighter and experiences pain or is uncomfortable. And so it's something that we don't want, like in that particular situation. I kind of mentioned earlier also about the awareness under anesthesia. Sometimes it's the metrics, it's the blood pressure getting higher, it's the heart rate getting more elevated. And we know that the body is reacting to something. So those are our, like, you know, those are our signals to say, hey, let's deepen this person's anesthetic. Let's give them more pain medication. And because maybe they have that breathing tube in and they can't speak, or they're still asleep, but their body's experiencing something and we don't want that to happen. So we can use those metrics. Sometimes in the cases of where they're in that heavy sedation state, we see them starting to move around. Maybe they're just like starting to wake up, not necessarily feeling pain, but I don't know. I would think that maybe that patient would just rather sleep and not know that they're having, you know, surgery. So once again, I see that movement and I make them fall asleep a little deeper.
Mm-hmm. Just in case.
Yeah, just in case. So, I mean, even if they're not like necessarily experiencing pain, they're starting to wake up. And in some cases, like that wake up and that movement, like we don't want, because then they can hurt their surgery. Yeah, like the classic example of like, sometimes we do like breast procedures that are just under heavy sedation. And so if you start kind of thrashing around, that could, you know, it makes it much more challenging for the surgeon to do his or her job. And it, you know, could cause potential issues for the patient, you know, who would get like injured.
The experiencing pain, but maybe just forgetting it, that aspect of it is, you know, can be disturbing for people to think about, because it's like people's, you know, one of people's worst nightmares is to be like, you know, you can't move, but you're experiencing pain and nobody knows about it, right? And but then, you know, you add in the element of like, well, if you forget all about that, like, did it really happen? Did it really, you know, it raises these questions about consciousness, where it's like, you know, if you were blackout drunk and someone tortured you, but you remember nothing about it, like, did it really happen?
Did it really affect you? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, so it raises these really interesting questions that are, they're scary, but, you know, make you think about the nature of consciousness.
Yeah. And I mean, it is, so there was a study and, this was a while back, and so I haven't really followed up on it, but there was some study that showed that like awareness under anesthesia is like a lot higher than we realize, but that people, patients tend to like either not remember it or chalk it up to like, did that really happen?
Yeah. Was it a dream or something?
Or was it, you know, was it real? Yeah. So it's maybe higher than we realize. We use our metrics as best we can to keep patients asleep, you know, when we think they need to be asleep for these surgeries. And so, with that said, I can't say that, quote unquote, I've had a patient complain of awareness under anesthesia for surgery that they needed to be asleep under. Mm-hmm. So I must be doing something okay. You know, like I don't know too many of my colleagues who've had that issue either. So either they've either forgotten that they had it, or or like it just, you know, it's less than we realize. They've tried to come out with different equipment that actually measures like EEGs. So like your brainwave activity while you're sleeping. Like initially we thought this was going to like revolutionize anesthesia and change how we practice. And that way we can adjust dosages just perfectly. So, however, it turned out not to be any better than just using clinical judgment. So that's actually, that particular device has kind of fallen out of favor.
So is it just because the brain waves are hard to figure out exactly what's going on, kind of thing?
Yeah. I think the clinical correlation to the actual measurement didn't pan out to be as great as people were hoping.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's so many interesting studies on these things that I know nothing about. Yeah.
it's all a lot of trial and error still to this day. Like, unfortunately or fortunately, like some of the physiology and how to measure it. I mean, if you think about it, like I have only practiced in the modern era of anesthesia, meaning like anesthetics where we actually have equipment that watches your heart the entire time, you know, measures the oxygen level of your blood. But maybe, I don't know, a decade before I started practicing, maybe two decades, to determine a patient's oxygen level, like in their bloodstream, they would evaluate your lips to see if it was blue or not. So they were literally looking for cyanosis as their marker of whether you were breathing enough.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's where we were coming from. Like, those were the original days of anesthetics.
Progress is slow and steady.
Yes.
That was a talk with anesthesiologist Ashita Goyal. This has been the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zachary Elwood. You can learn more about it at behavior-podcast.com. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends and family. That's the best way you can show your appreciation and encourage me to work on it more. Thanks for listening. Music by Small Scots.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business, like Delta Airlines. Together with T-Mobile for Business, Delta Airlines is putting 5G into the hands of ground staff so they can better assist on-the-go travelers with real-time information. From the Delta Sky Club to the Jet Bridge, this is elevating customer experience. And Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business to connect over 2,200 stores around the country with 5G business internet. Plus, T-Mobile is powering AI solutions so Tractor Supply team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Coming back from an injury or any painful condition is not a do-it-yourself project. Gaylord Physical Therapy in Cromwell, Cheshire, and North Haven has the technology and talent to help you get back to what you love. Whether it's taking a walk or running a marathon, Gaylord Physical Therapy in Cromwell, Cheshire, and North Haven can help you get back to your personal best. Gaylord, think possible.
Also available in Madison and Wallingford. Go to gaylord.org for more information.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.